Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. We're going to be talking today in our Hour of Mind Power about a subject matter that I think is extremely important. If you're in business, if you're aspiring to be in business, all of this is so very, very valuable. We have a very talented lady. Her name is Monique Reese. In fact, her background is quite incredible, and I'll share that with you in just a moment. We're going to be talking about real-time marketing for business growth. We live in a world today that has altered so much in technology. How do you deal with this? How do you, as a business person, compete in the world in a way that's going to be, well, shall I say, comfortable for you? And economically viable, but more importantly, enable you to grow a business that you feel is worth growing. Monique Reese, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
I am so delighted to have you on today because I find that one of the biggest challenges anyone in business, whether they're a small business person like myself or they have a big corporation, is moving with the changes. Now, your business, Market Smarter, you work with entrepreneurial people like myself. You work with Fortune 500 organizations, and you really are in to creating market plans. What is it about marketing plans that's so fascinating to you? Why is it that this is a passion for you? So many people are bored with just the concept.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the word planning, I think. Whether it's marketing planning or business planning, it sounds like there's inactivity. But I think a marketing plan is so important because it really serves as a roadmap for a business. So it helps them determine where they're going, why they're going there, and all of the elements that go behind that, the operational pieces, who's doing what. It really creates a nice roadmap for the entire organization, so that people can execute more effectively. Yeah, and that's much more effective than doing it by the seat of your pants, right, which is how a lot of entrepreneurs do it.
Oh, so many of us have done that, and many times there have not been the mentors that are really that knowledgeable. They may know about, how you do a business plan, but when it comes to the marketing strategy, this isn't something that they're familiar with, and it really is a whole different mindset, and that's why your book, Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, is so important, and how to use social media, measure marketing, and creating a culture of execution, all of these points, and your book really gets down to the bare bones. It must have taken you a long time to put this together.
It really did. It probably took over a year to write, and I would say it's the culmination of about 25 years of experience. And what I wanted to do was to share with people an easier way of creating a marketing and a business plan, and all the things that I had to learn through trial and error. And I tried to document all of that information so that I could give it to people in a really concise manner and help them be much more effective faster.
In your 25 years of being in the world of marketing, what are, and I'll use the plural because I know there's just not one component, but what are the most significant changes that you have seen evolve in marketing, especially for a business person, and would there be a difference between the smaller business and the larger business? I'm really asking you two questions.
Right. Well, I'll take your first one, which is actually a really difficult question to answer in terms of what's changed. I would have to say that technology. Mm-hmm. That technology has enabled marketing to be much easier in some respects, but also much more difficult. And marketing requires a lot of specialization today, where a couple years ago when social media was new, you could have somebody that was doing a website, search engine optimization, social media, things like that. And now each of those disciplines is really branching out into some different areas. So, you know, the really great thing that's happened is that where we used to have just a monologue to customers through traditional forms of marketing and advertising, such as radio, television, things like that, we can now create a two-way dialogue and talk with our customers, engage them at a much deeper level, and then respond to their needs in a much faster fashion than we ever have been able to in the past.
And I think that in many respects, especially for someone that would be in a smaller business, it's hard to wrap your mind around that. I have spoken at chambers, and I know there are so many small business people out there that just, they just say, wow, we just don't have a budget for this. I feel like I need 10 different me's operating in these different capacities. How in the world can someone on a limited budget be able to operate effectively with marketing? What would you recommend to them?
Well, take one thing at a time. So this is where the marketing plan comes back into play and is such a valuable tool, because it just going through the process of creating a plan is just as important as the outcome, in my opinion. Because ideally, an entrepreneur is doing this with a small team. He or she may do it, attempt to do a lot of it on their own in terms of creating vision and goals. But the rest of it, then the rest of the marketing plan, which you know I break into six different components, such as ongoing research and analysis, the nice thing is that that can be delegated to different people in a company where different people are responsible for different aspects of the plan and keeping it updated and current. So when I talk about real-time marketing, what I mean is that there's a plan that's created, but then it's continually updated by by people in the company, and they're constantly learning from the marketplace. They'll execute a specific promotion, look at the results, and then adjust from there. And so doing a marketing plan and doing it in a collaborative sort of a way enables others in the company to get involved. And then that spreads out the workload as well. So it's not just spreading out the workload, but everybody is learning all the time. So it actually creates a lot of efficiencies in that way.
I think also when you have a company, whether it's small or large, when you have that kind of inner communication where the left hand is aware of what the right hand is doing, I think it really enhances a company environment, because it gives a sense of energy, purpose, and whatever the passion may be by the visionary that started the company, it is supported by the other participants because they realize they're a very significant part of this working. It's just not a person sitting up in an ivory tower. And I think that's one of the most significant points that you bring out of many in your book, and that is this collaborative effort. You go into talking about the purpose for a business and having a passion for it, have an intentional purpose. And I thought that your one chapter, it's your fifth chapter, you had a cute title that I really liked. You said, "What do pizza and shoes have in common?" Why don't you share with my audience what you were referring to with that section?
Yes, and I have to give Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos, full credit for that, because I heard him talk in a speech. This was a couple of years ago, and in the middle of this speech, he was talking about an experience that he had had with some vendors. That he was at a trade show and meeting with several different vendors, and they happened to be in Santa Monica, and it was early morning, about 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and one of the people that he was with, she got an intense craving for pizza. She was really hungry, so was everybody else, and the hotel that they were staying at stopped serving room service. So she really wanted pizza, and they started calling around and trying to figure out who was still delivering at that hour. and couldn't find anyone. And so Tony looked at her and said, why don't you call Zappos and ask them? And she said, well, let me just remind you, we're in Santa Monica. Your company is headquartered in Las Vegas. You actually sell shoes and other kinds of items, and we're looking for pizza. And he said, go ahead and just try it. See if the person that answers the phone can help you find a pizza place that's still delivering. So she picked up the phone and called Zappos, and Zappos, the person on the other end of the phone, was taken aback by the question just for a couple seconds. And he said, well, I tell you what, if you hold the line for just a minute, let me get right back to you. So she's waiting on the phone and not thinking anything is going to happen. And the guy came back on the phone and he said, hey, I've got 5 different locations for you. And Tony, in his humble way, just smiled, of course. But what that said was that Zappos is, they have a tagline that says Zappos is powered by service. Mm-hmm. And that is a great example of how if you create a plan, have a really compelling vision for what you want to create, then and everyone in the company understands what that is, which is what the plan does as well, then people can execute against that. And then service becomes whatever it takes to wow a customer.
I think that's so important. While you were talking, I thought, I remember watching, as I know so many thousands of people have, millions actually, Miracle on 34th Street, where Santa Claus gives information on where people can find things. And to me, that movie always was such a good demonstration of sales persona with that one character. And what you've just talked about with the pizza and the shoes is the same thing. It's give of what you have knowledge of. Take time to find out what a person needs and support them, and by golly, it works. I found it works in my business. Why do you think we've gotten such a disassociation with customer service?
Oh, yeah, Donna, that's a great question, and I ask myself that all the time, and a lot while I was writing this book, because we're going through this long. We're supposed to be out of this recession, but I'm going to go ahead and say recession because it's we've been in a down economy for many, many years, right? Mm-hmm. And so if business leaders just stop for a moment and say, well, what can I do that has a really distinct competitive advantage? And what can I do that's not going to cost a lot of money? Well, it's not advertising, right? Mm-hmm. It's doing something else. It's getting much closer to your customer and understanding what they want and providing that to them. It's once a company gets a customer, it's hanging on to them and treating them in a really extraordinary manner. So looking at this example with this particular vendor, I'm sure she loves Zappos anyway, but when somebody has an experience like that, they become a customer for life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know why companies don't get that. So you look at, across industries, let's take the airline industry as an example. Because it's something that almost everybody can relate to. If I were to ask you, what's a company that provides really great, extraordinary service in the airline industry, what would you say?
Oh, Southwest Airlines.
Right.
Immediately to the forefront, that and Alaska Airlines.
Uh-huh. And then what would be your opposite experience of that?
Oh, gracious. I would say one of the worst experiences I've had, especially with charges, was with United Airlines, and I think Delta was another one, mm-hmm. where there were all kinds of fees, and I'm just going, oh my goodness, what, just totally surprised.
So your response was, I think 99.9% of the time, that's exactly the response I get. And so you have to wonder why a company like that doesn't quite understand some of the basics of customer service. So Southwest Airlines certainly has some operational efficiencies and advantages, which actually United tried to copy for a short period of time, which didn't work. And that's because the service wasn't matched. Mm-hmm. And so Southwest Airlines has taken away all of the frills. They have you stand in line for your place. They don't assign seats. They do a really great job of setting expectations. But the people, the stewardesses, the stewards are always extremely friendly. And because of that very small gesture, they tend to have people that come back over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Whereas United, it's it's just not the same experience. So I don't know why companies don't get that. To me, it's you know, in so many different industries, and especially if you look at commodity industries like an airline, where profit margins are extremely thin. Grocery industry as well, there's some that really stand out, and it's because of their customer service. Mm-hmm. And it sounds very simple to have a great customer service strategy, but it's also very difficult to execute. It's not something that can be relegated to a specific department. It's something that really needs to be executed by lots of different people in a company.
It's the culture. There's an old saying in business that the attitude and persona of management permeates an organization. This is an old, old saying that goes way, way back, and so many times it's demonstrated. There was a hotel I stayed in just recently, and they have gone, in my view, even though they're rated very highly, their personnel, the training of the personnel, the place was purchased by someone else, it's become so cold and so sterile and so unfriendly. I mean, after all, it's people meeting people. We're not talking about just a number here. And I think that that disassociation, and I had an experience with a member of staff, and I looked at this and I thought, this is sad. I have been a consistent customer for years. Why is this happening? And I know it's because of a certain management attitude that's being perpetuated by how many, I don't know. So it's my responsibility to let them know about my experience, which I'm going to do. But it's an interesting thing to watch, where you have an environment maybe that has been wonderfully warm and friendly, and then things change, management changes, somebody buys the business, all they're interested in is the bottom line, and everything that created that wonderful persona, and this is just one example, goes away. And then they wonder why they don't have their old customers, what's happened to the old customers. And I think this is as old as time itself. It's really, we really have to remember it's people dealing with people.
Right, right. And, you know, the sad thing is that a customer that is unhappy, a disgruntled customer, it used to be that they would tell, on average, 11 to 13 people. Now, because of social media and other types of ways that we can communicate with others, they'll tell 13,000, not 13. You know? So it's really important that businesses pay attention to customers that are unhappy. You know, oftentimes they won't even say anything; they just go away, like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And other times they'll go online and vent that way, which creates a really bad reputation for a company pretty fast.
You brought up two words, social media. Now, for so many individuals, the change in this environment is so fast that they just hold their breath and their mental noses, literally, and saying, I don't even want to get into this stuff. But it is so vital in marketing. What would you recommend to someone where this is literally terrifying to them? They just hear all of these stories. What do we do? How do we use it? How can I, as a business person, be more effective with it? Is it really worth spending the time on?
And right. Yeah, I think a lot of people ask that question. And I think what I would say, first of all, is that there are no, you know, real social media experts out there. It's just, it's such a new area. And, you know, even though it's been in existence for, you know, a few years now, everything's new and it changes every day.
Mm-hmm.
So, so you could, you know, I would advise, a business owner to jump in somewhere, but figure out where their customers are. So if it's a consumer business, they might be in, they might be on Facebook a lot. If it's a B2B, a business-to-business, technology sort of a business, then they're probably going to be on LinkedIn or some other social network, perhaps Twitter. But I would say that they should begin asking customers what they use. And then start slow, jump in, and first of all, listen. And by listen, I mean look at what people are saying, how they're conversing and sharing information. Look at what's important to them. And then from what you learn, you can start to engage with customers and begin to have a dialogue with them and see what kind of response that they're getting. But just the going into social media and just looking at the learning that can take place is really a wonderful thing, and then it becomes much less intimidating. So I really don't believe social media is about creating promotions per se. I think there's some companies that do that and do it well, but it tends to augment a much bigger strategy. And the real value is connecting with other people, finding out what's important to them, and responding to that.
Strategy is a very big, big thing that people have to work with when they're in business. I don't care what environment you're in. Sometimes you're going to have to change the costume you wear. That's just a figurative expression, because it's necessary to reinvent yourself. You may have, as you give an example of baking soda, the best baking soda on the planet, and all of a sudden people just aren't interested. I was fascinated with the point that you brought out in your book, and you use baking soda, Arm & Hammer baking soda, and you said, people just aren't cooking the way they used to. It used to be this was really a big thing. They'd give recipes and do all kinds of stuff. So they had to reinvent themselves. The product didn't change. The product was the same, but they had to put on a different costume. And
right.
You gave that example, and I thought that that was very significant. Many times businesses need to do that. How do you work with a strategy? How do you look at that, whether you're a small, medium, or large business?
Well, yeah, so it goes back to looking at the customer. So who is the main customer in a business? And so let me go to the example that you were just referring to with Arm & Hammer. So the product is old. I can't remember when it was first created. I want to say 50s. But it was a great item then, but they needed to reinvent it, right, and find some new purposes. So when they began to create new products using baking soda, like toothpaste, cat litter, deodorant, you know, a number of different types of products, each one of those customers is different. So they need to talk with each one of those customers in a different way and position that product very uniquely to each one of those audiences and to each one of those buying needs. So a customer that's looking for white teeth, they're talking to them about the benefits of Arm & Hammer baking soda for creating white teeth. Somebody else that wants a deodorizer for their cat, that's quite a different message, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really about looking at, you know, if a company wants to extend its brand or create new products and new ways to innovate, they need to look at the different audiences and then, of course, speak to that particular customer's needs.
And that is quite significant. One of the many components in your book that I really, really related to, you have three words. Emotion is viral. And by golly, this had to do with Dell and an experience that people had with that. But there was a man, Vincent Ferrari, on June 16th, 2006, and this was dealing with AOL.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us that story.
Well, he was, and this is an experience that, another one of those that so many people can relate to just as a consumer. So he had an account with AOL, and he was simply trying to disengage with the company. He was calling on behalf of his father, who just wasn't using the service at all. So he had called and said, listen, I'd like to cancel my account. And the person on the other end of the phone, who had some extremely poor training, gave him a hard time about it. So, you know, oftentimes people will try to, they get the upsell or whatever, but this guy was just real hard-headed, would not cancel the account. And Vincent became very agitated by that and, you know, to the point of yelling, please just cancel my account. And he was so frustrated with the whole experience that he called his the local television station and told them about their experience. And because so many other people had a negative experience. It's pretty common in that industry, just like airline industry, right? In terms of bad experience. And so there were actually three reporters that were on a conference call and had it on speaker, and they tried to cancel an account, and they actually had the same experience. So, you know, in this particular case, this individual, he happened to be a pretty avid blogger, and he wrote about his experience, and because so many people could really resonate with that story spread. And so, he had a small number of views on that video initially, and then it just grew and grew, and pretty soon he's on national television being interviewed by Matt Lauer. And so it's amazing how something like that can really take on a life of its own.
Well, and that's true. And that's one of the aspects of social media that has been so dramatic, for good, bad, or indifferent. I think of the material that people send me that sometimes is just amazing. I'll go, how in the world do they have the time to do this? I don't. I'm just amazed. And in business, like you said, it used to be by word of mouth, and now it is, but it's technical word of mouth. You just have so much fabulous material in your book, Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth. I think anyone, regardless of whether you're small, medium, or large business, would benefit from going through your book, Monique, because it is so detailed. And someone might take a look at it and go, oh, no, this is just too much for me to handle. But as you said, if you can take it a section at a time, your sections on strategy, your sections on working with social network, all of this is all going to be very, very valuable. We can't do it all at once, but maybe we can. If we don't have much of a team, maybe we can find those people that can become a part of a team and work together, collaborate in some way. You tell about how businesses can work together to support each other. You give some very, very good information. Your book, Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, I know that it's on your website, but what is your website? Where can people go to find
out more? Yes, it's marketsmarter.com.
Okay.
And the experience that you were just talking about, and this came from also the 25 years of working with entrepreneurs, where it's difficult to know where to start and to try to tackle a marketing plan. And I like your idea about just taking it in small bites. And one of the ways that I work with entrepreneurs is to facilitate them going through that process. Where what I've learned is that if entrepreneurs go through a 6-week to 8-week process of writing a plan, and they're doing this with other entrepreneurs that are working on their business and in their business and struggling with that, they can also get really great ideas from working together as a team.
Oh, I think that's so true. I really am a strong believer in brainstorming, because you can feel like you're suffocating, just absolutely drowning.
Exactly. Or feel very alone, right?
Absolutely. And then you can have multiple minds with a common purpose and direction, where you're not going to try to cut each other's throats. You're saying, okay, let's work together as a team. The results can be just incredible, absolutely incredible. Monique Reese, I'm so grateful to have you on the show today. It's been an absolute delight. Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, I'll tell you, it's an eye-opener. Want to know how to build a brand? Want to know all kinds of aspects? This is a hands-on piece of material. Have a highlighter in hand when you work with it. Maybe just work with one chapter at a time, and you'll find that you will become more empowered because of that. Go to her website, marketsmarter.com. Marketsmarter.com. Again, Monique, thank you for being my guest today. It's been a delight.
And Donna, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Continue to work, because, boy, is it needed. We need it desperately.
You too.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you would like to call in and chat with me directly, which I would be delighted to do, I'll be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and of course, then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Again, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about activating joy. Yes, Alexandra Parnes is going to be my guest. Joy is something we can bring into our space very naturally, so we're going to be telling you how you can do that. And then for those of you that are either in a crisis with a potential foreclosure on your home, or you know of someone that's going through this, you need to listen in on Thursday to Anna Huevos, Save Your Home. This is one of the best pieces of material I've had cross my review desk. So I hope that you'll tune in for that. Tell your friends about it. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about an extreme intuitive makeover. That's right, and Deidre is going to be my guest. So we've got a wonderful lineup of people. Tell your friends about the show. Tell them to tune in. You know, if they're at work, they can listen as they're working. That's right, because we have this wonderful aspect of technology that makes that possible. What have we learned from technology? Well, that's a very broad statement, isn't it? Let's narrow it down. What have we learned from implementing one of the dynamic pieces of technology called the Hubble telescope? Well, I know they put the lens in the wrong way, but we have found out so much information about our universe that we didn't even have a clue about. We, as human beings on this planet Earth, can only see so much. The telescopes that were available up until the Hubble did a phenomenal job of expanding our understanding. But what was really going out in the universe? Well, we don't know it all. We never, ever will. But I don't know about you. Any of the photographs that I've seen, the dynamics of this living universe, which we are floating in, to me, are just phenomenal. So here are some of the things. And I always have to chuckle when numbers are given because I think, maybe, maybe not. Because I honestly don't think anybody knows. They can play all the games they want. They don't know how old this universe is. They guesstimate that it's 13.7 billion years old. They really don't know. But that's as good a guess as any, I guess. And we have a lot more planets floating around in that universal space than we previously thought. Well, how would we have known without the technology out there showing us? We would have had people, just like during the time of Copernicus, no, no, the Earth is flat. Oh, yes, we still have some people that believe that. That's true. That's true. There's an organization for people that believe the Earth is flat. I don't think they have many members, but nonetheless. Giant galaxies, well, they collide, and they create new stars from gas and dust. It's a living, living essence out there. Hubble shows that. Dust rings around stars most likely transform into planets. Again, they're guessing, but they're saying it's likely. And dark matter. They They just don't know what it is. It's energy. But what kind of energy? Isn't that exciting? Just think of the generations to come. What they are going to be able to explore. They're not going to be watching Star Trek on television. They're going to be living it. They're going to actually be out there in outer space. And Jupiter's clouds, guess what they're made of? Do you know? I didn't realize that it was crystallized ammonia and compounds of carbon, sulfur, and phosphorus. Common ingredients that we have on our planet, Jupiter's clouds. That's what they consist of. And then there's organic molecules in the atmospheres of planets orbiting other stars. There's a megastorm. Now imagine this. We complain about what we go through here on planet Earth with our tsunamis, our hurricanes, our cyclones, all kinds of different weather effects. But on Jupiter, there's a megastorm that when it circles the planet, it changes color frequently. And that's due to changes in temperature while it's going through all of its activity. They've been able to show stars being born and dying. And it happens in so many different ways. They think the universe is expanding. Maybe it's always been expanding. But who even had the capability of imagining that to be the case? I think when we can look at just those few statements that blow to bits a lot of things that were believed so for so many centuries, it is a sign of the times that we're in. So it's just like marketing. When you go from point A to point B, when you have certain aspects of technology that are introduced, as Monique reset, it's a learning curve because there's no experts on this. Everybody's punting because that's the only way that they know how to learn, and that is the learning curve. That's what we all do. Here we are in this phenomenal environment that is challenging us every day. And just when we think we've got everything nailed down nice and tight, which we never do, boom, something comes along that creates a disruptive environment, shakes us all up, and we just don't know whether we like it or not. And we may complain a lot. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But you know what? Just in the past 100 years, the disruptive technology is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. If you watch some old movies that were made in the 60s and 70s, no cell phones. If computers were mentioned, they were behemoths. They were huge. So here we are today, where now you can have a smartphone, where you can do things with that smartphone that the younger generation just takes for granted. The older generation says, what can it do? And we try to learn and keep up with it as quickly as we can. It's really quite an exciting time to be living in, as far as I'm concerned. It's really quite amazing. And addressing that, and by the way, if you want to give me a call, 888-627-6008. In the medical area, there are many things that are changing, and they're changing very, very fast. And I really have a strong sense of compassion both for the medical personnel as well as for the patient. Because how are you going to keep up with all of these changes that are evolving? We have so many people that have the time and the tools to create innovation. And I'll give you an example. A family member had to go into emergency. It was a very critical cardiac situation. And when they were in the examination room, in the RER in the U.S., you can't beat it. It's just absolutely incredible. These are very, very dedicated, talented, and well-trained individuals. Well, one of the first things that they do when you're in a cardiac situation is they want to get that heart activity stabilized, calmed down, and, of course, they like to draw blood. They want to know. They're able through blood tests to determine certain things about what's going on in the body. They couldn't find this person's vein to be able to put a needle in to be able to withdraw blood. Well, normally what would happen is that you'd feel like you were a pin cushion. It would be extremely painful because when someone is in a major cardiac situation or going through any kind of a physical trauma, it's not unusual for the veins and the arteries to collapse, to become very difficult to find because the blood flow isn't doing its usual job. So what happened is this individual, and I saw this nurse goes out. She said, I'm going to go get this machine. She brings in a machine that has, it's the size of a laptop computer, and she attaches a apparatus to this person's arm, is able to locate the vein needed to draw blood, does it, no pain, no suffering to the patient, boom, it's done. It was amazing. I asked the nurse, when did you get this machine? She said, oh, we've only had it for a few weeks. This is brand new as a piece of equipment in emergency because this has always been a challenge. Now, who invented this machine? I haven't a clue. One day I'm going to find out. But someone said there's got to be a better way. That is what innovation is all about. Someone observing a need, a challenge that's not being taken care of. Maybe it's been done a certain way for eons. But here we have something that was developed that, one, makes the job a lot easier for the nurse, the technician, that's trying to help the patient. Two, the patient is not going through unnecessary pain and suffering. And three, they're able to administer medications or IVs, whatever it is, a lot more efficiently and effectively. So it works for all age brackets. This is an incredible accomplishment. Well, they're also finding that there are tests that people don't need to take as frequently. Now, this is a challenge because lots of times certain protocols are in place and they are absolute. Now, what about an ECG or an EKG? Either abbreviation works. Now, this is all about reading out your heart's electrical activity, and it costs about $50. An ECG, which is called an electrocardiogram, can identify irregular heart rhythms. Someone's having a heart attack, reads it immediately. But they have yet, with all the years that these technologies have been employed, they have never tested whether either one of these systems can detect a risk of heart disease when you don't have these symptoms. So in other words, is this valid doing if someone's not having any heart problems? Do you just automatically do it when you go and get a physical? Well, for an irregular heart rate, unexplained fainting, or a family history of heart disease, sometimes an ECG can be very helpful. Now, there's a cardiologist, Sarah Stammen. She said, she's put out a book, Best Practices for a Healthy Heart. She said it's very good to use to screen athletes for risk of sudden death and for people with high blood pressure, because then you can find that if there is something here that's going on in the body that gives you the signal that something is happening here. But there are so many individuals now that are against routine screening for heart disease for people at low risk. You know, maybe they don't have high blood pressure, they're not obese, all of this. And if you test healthy people, it's just not going to work very well. So the echocardiogram, which is a moving ultrasound of the heart, can show it how well it's pumping blood and whether it's got structural problems. Now, these start going up in price. It's $200 to $500 here. Now, an echo can help spot heart failure, atrial fibrillation, and murmurs. Now, this often is caused by leaky or stiff valves. It can help people with high blood pressure because it will find out through this test if there's an enlargement, weakness, or stiffness in the heart muscle. So there are pros and there are cons, and it's really an interesting thing, the challenges that we are coming up with in medicine. And again, technology has enabled us to help a lot more people. I can testify to that. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to share some things with you. And let's just take that break, and we'll find out what I'm going to share with you when we come back. Donna Sebo here. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. And a lot of the newscasts, in conversations people are discussing on the air, bullying has come up. Well, usually they're talking about kids. Well, I think every generation has always had its bullies. I don't think there's anything new with this. But you don't often hear about adults bullying other adults. And I came across this story that was written by Carl Albrecht, and it has to do with Mel Brooks. Now, Mel Brooks is this individual in show business. You may or may not be aware of him. And he's done a lot of wild and wacky movies. Well, apparently this man has had an attitude. And there was a film called The Producers that he was directing. And this was in the late 60s. And Mel Brooks just absolutely became obnoxious. He was ranting, raging at the actors and actresses that were performing in this film, and he just went off on this tirade. He was being an obnoxious diva. That's what I'll call him. And this apparently was a part of his persona. This is something that was typical. Have you ever heard of people in show business or in the artistic world, and someone will say, oh, ignore them. This is just what artists do. And I think that's a bad attitude, because I don't think anybody should have bad manners. And I don't think anybody should bully or be rude to other people. But Mel had it down to a science. He just got away with it over and over and over again. Well, there was an actor whose name was Zero Mostel. He wasn't impressed with Mel Brooks' behavior at all. He just, when Mel Brooks started displaying this, started to walk out. And Brooks, in the middle of his dramatic tirade, belittling all of the people around him, yells out, where do you think you're going? Mostel stopped, turned around and looked at him. He said, I'm going to my dressing room until your tantrum is over. Well, nobody had ever said this to Mel Brooks. He was shocked. He really got speechless. Can you imagine that? And Mel Brooks came back with this question. You mean you'd let this entire production come to a standstill until my tantrum is over? Guess what Zero Mostel said? One word. Yes. Guess what Mel Brooks did? He burst out into a big smile and said, my tantrum is over. Now, what this was is that the bully was challenged. There were two very intelligent people at work. Mostel was not going to be bullied. He refused to let Mel Brooks intimidate him. And Mel Brooks was smart enough as a director to realize that his extreme attitude to try to get a certain effect was not working. And if it doesn't work, you shift your positioning. You rethink it. You change your tactics. I think so many times we have experiences in life where we are being bullied in one way or another. And the thing about bullying, and it took me a while to learn it. I can remember being bullied when I was a little girl. My husband and I will talk about this sometimes when we hear about these various stories of youngsters having challenges. You hear about the bullying on Facebook. You hear about all kinds of things. But if you don't stand up to this, and if you're not encouraged to stand up to it, you're going to find that you're always going to have that feeling of being a victim. You don't have to put up with it. It's not a requirement. I think my most vivid lesson came when I was about 5 years of age. I had been really bullied by a next-door neighbor's daughter. And Judy was just notorious for this. She was awful. And I had always been taught by my mother, you don't fight, you don't do this, you don't do that. Good girls don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. So I go home, and I'm crying. I'm just a little person, and I'm just crying. Well, my father had come home from a golf game. He had not had a good day. He had a lousy golf score, from what I learned later. And he's climbing up the steps into our house, and he sees me blubbering. And he wanted to know what I was crying about. And I told him, Judy beat me up, and she did this, and she did that. And I was just going on and on. The next thing, my father was not sympathetic. He looked at me and said, go around and let her have it. And I looked at him. My tears stopped. I said, you mean that's okay? He said, yes, go ahead. And so I did. She never bullied me again. I stood up to her. She never, ever bullied me again. Now, some people listening might say, oh, that's terrible. Your father did a terrible thing. No, he did not. What happens is many times to people who are bullies, whether they're kids or whether they're adults, they are scared to death. They are trying to lord it over somebody else because they have such a low level of self-esteem. They don't know how to function in what we consider a balanced way. So I just thought I'd share that story with you. Well, I have this wonderful, wonderful ice cream cake recipe that I wanted to share with you. But guess what? We're out of time. So I'm going to have to share it with you tomorrow. And I want you to remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It's been a delight sharing this time with you. Tell your friends. The more the merrier. And you just have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are in this world of ours. And know that you're very special. And I'm so glad we've been able to be together today. We'll be here same time, same place, right here with the Donna Seabrook Show. Join us, won't you? Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Seabrook Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to the Donna Seabrook Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.